Welcome to Outspoken, where we dive deep into the topics and intersection of technology, money, business, and passion. I'm your host, Shayna Cosgrove.
You have these ideas, and then you're like, Amanda, make this happen. And it's so challenging, and it's so difficult, and it's all over the place, and I'm always so exhausted. I love it. I hear this from candidates that I chat with, and they'll say, you know, well, what do you measure success with, or what does the company measure success with? And I say, actually, it's not how many proposals we on or how many contracts that we have. It is our employee satisfaction and retention rate. It's just interesting. If you just even take year by year, the change and the growth in us and also in our company, and then to think about like, wow, what does the next year have in store?
Amanda O'Donohue is Nyla Technology Solutions' Chief Experience Officer and Chief Operating Officer. Amanda expertly prospects and maintains mutually beneficial relationships with business partners and customers alike. Internally, she directs Nyla's process improvements to an unparalleled level of employee engagement and that every potential candidate experience is a positive and pleasant one. Amanda leads Nyla's philanthropic efforts through external partnerships as well as spearheading internal initiatives. In 2019, Amanda received the Daily Record's Leading Women Award, which honors 50 women who are 40 years of age or younger for the accomplishments they have made so far in their careers. Amanda graduated from the State University of New York College at Buffalo with a Bachelor's of Science in Forensic Chemistry. She also earned a Master's in Forensic Science from Towson University. This podcast is sponsored by Nyla Technology Solutions, an SBA-certified 8A, HubZone, woman-owned small business specializing in full-stack software engineering and data science services to the U.S. government. Our innovative solutions are built to match the speed of mission. For more information, partnering opportunities, and new job openings, please visit our website, www.nyla.io. Thank you so much for being here today, Amanda O'Donohue. I know you report to me and I asked you to do this. And you guys can see the expression on her face, but she looks a little bit like she's about to go on a roller coaster.
You never know with you.
So Amanda, introduce yourself and describe what your day job is.
Amanda O'Donohue, and I work for Nyla Technology Solutions, and I am their Chief Experience Officer.
What does that actually mean? What the heck is a Chief Experience Officer? Was that a title you wanted?
It is not. It's grown on me over the years, but it makes sense because it kind of started with, you know, my role as a Chief Operating Officer, but more importantly, my passion and my vision for the company always was I wanted to make sure that any interaction with Nyla was value add, positive, and pleasant. So whether that be in social media, whether that be my staffing team and candidate interviews, or whether that be a BD discussion with somebody for the first time, right? Are we providing helpful information, responsive?
When you grew up, was this your dream job? What did you want to be when you grew up?
Growing up, I wanted to be a pharmacist. I started off liking biology, right? It explained a lot for me. And then biology didn't explain enough. So then I really gravitated towards chemistry and biochemistry. It answered all the questions of why. With that, it seemed like that was an easy transition from college. I started off my undergrad at Buffalo State University, a degree in forensic chemistry. So it's ultimately a degree in chemistry with a few extra. I got a minor in criminal justice and credit shy of getting a minor in biology as well. So it's a mix of the two.
Who convinced you to go study forensic chemistry? Like, how did that even happen? I had never heard of it till I met you.
I think that the CSIs and the NCIS has popularized the degree program, but it sounded a little cooler than just getting a chemistry degree. I never had any aspirations of becoming a doctor or getting a PhD in college. So it had for me a clear line of taking a degree and then having a job after.
Did you know anyone who was working in chemistry?
No. I went into it totally blind, which is me in a nutshell.
Can you unpack that a little bit? What's that mean? Like you just leap before you look?
I'm definitely not afraid to try things. I'm not afraid to say, well, let's try this and see where it goes. Chemistry and the life sciences interested me, so I tried that out.
Tell me a little bit about what it was like growing up in Buffalo.
So I grew up in a really small town, Holland, New York, and I graduated with 86 people.
And that was a public high school?
It was, yes. So, of course, we all knew each other. We knew each other's families. It was very small. So when time came to graduate, the thought of the University of Buffalo, it was just so overwhelming to go from a small town with one stoplight to something like that. It was just a lot for me, and I struggled with it. I definitely let fear take a hold of me there. And the other thing, I think, is I wasn't prepared for college. Neither of my parents completed a bachelor's degree, so it was all brand new. So kind of doing it by myself as a young 17-year-old was just a lot. And I've always worked through school, so I started working at 13, babysitting to help pay for like the things that I wanted, school field trips. I assumed that I would go to school and I would work to pay my tuition as well.
What was your job in college?
In college, I was a waitress. So I worked 5 years right out of high school, and I worked there for 5 years. So I would go to school all day, and then I would waitress all night.
Did you get a job as soon as you graduated college?
When I graduated with my undergrad, it was in forensic chemistry. I ended up getting a job in Orchard Park. It was mentholatum. And so they make Cosmo pharmaceuticals. So they don't necessarily make drugs, but they make things with active ingredients such as Icy Hot and all the Oxy acne products and soft lips. So I was in their lab testing all those, the sunscreens, avobenzone, all of those products and sunscreens. And I was there for about 2 years or 3 years. And I knew that's not something I wanted to do long term. And so I started toying around with the idea of going back to school. And then my friend and I went down to visit my good friend Liz, who lived in Baltimore City. And that was like my first experience visiting a city. And it was like the best trip. And I just fell in love with Baltimore, and I took a big plunge and decided I'm going to go to Towson, and I'm going to live in the city. And then I remember I was so excited, and I think it was less than a week. You know, it was a city, and I didn't recognize anything. And I found a Target, and I called my dad, and I was just like, I just don't want to leave. This is the only familiar thing I can find. You know, there was no Tops or Wegmans, and everything's different, and I can't get around. So I cried to him in the freezer aisle of Target for a bit. And then I picked myself up, and I figured it out eventually.
Describe how we ended up meeting.
After I got my master's degree at Towson, I started working at a biotech company as an associate scientist in process development. The job in process development was really to take ideas from research and development and to be that bridge between research and development and manufacturing and figure out how can we scale this up? What kind of problems are we going to run into? How can we quality control and test to tell somebody how long these reagents are good for, how you should store things? So it was those details of taking an idea and making it a product that people could use. The job was challenging to start with, but I think in a lot of lab jobs, it can become a little monotonous. There's some challenges, but in short, I definitely knew that I wanted more shortly after I started that job. I worked there for about 4 years, commuting from Baltimore City to Frederick every day. In that 4 years, I was working at that biotech company. I got married and I was pregnant with my first child. And towards the end of my pregnancy, I remember saying to Brian, my husband, I just don't know if I can go back to the 40, 45 an hour job plus the commute. I didn't wait to have a baby and to do all this to be gone all the time. So I said, I think I'm just going to quit and I'm definitely going to find something. Don't you worry. And he was like, okay, maybe this is the pregnancy hormones talking. I don't know what he said. Okay. And so
I don't think he had a choice, right?
So I was on maternity leave and probably 3 to 4 weeks later, I said, I really need something else. I had saw through a mom's group we were both a part of that you were looking for some help in your startup company. I thought this would be a great job to be able to work from home and still be that, what I thought, stay-at-home mom and also a career woman, it would be a good mix. So I applied and we met over some gravy fries and
fish tacos.
And I thought we hit it off. I'm not sure you thought the same. You did reject me at first, but in true Amanda fashion, I was not taking no for an answer. So I said, I think you definitely want me for this job, and this is the reason. And oh, by the way, this is where I live, which happened to be a hub zone, and this is what I bring to the table. And you hired me.
The hub zone fact alone was pretty incredible. Most people didn't even know what our company did, much less a hub zone. But not only did you look up the hub zone and then you found out that you were, in fact, in a hub zone, that definitely
caught your eye.
That definitely caught my eye.
And I think what you had said was you were concerned, how do you go from getting these degrees in chemistry and having this long career, and then you want to work for me part-time?
I thought you were crazy. I couldn't relate to up and quitting a job, right? Yeah. I couldn't relate to that. I kept asking you, like, well, didn't you like reach out to Johns Hopkins? Aren't there a lot of biotech firms locally you could be working for? I couldn't understand why you wanted to do this. So you started, and how old was your baby when you started?
She was 4 months old.
And did I have everything like well laid out?
No, not at all.
Amanda had just up and quit her job. She has a 4-month-old baby. She's newly married. I'm newly married. I'm working full-time on contract. I have a 2-year-old and my husband is still working in the government. And at this point, we had, what, 2 other employees besides me? What was it like in the beginning?
I think in the beginning, well, always, I think you gave an idea of what you wanted to have done or what kind of results you wanted. And then you said, can you figure it out and let me know? Pretty much from day one. But that worked for me. I've never looked back on the career that I did have and regret my decision, because I think that this job and our relationship, where you have these ideas and then you're like, Amanda, make this happen. And it's so challenging and it's so difficult and it's all over the place. And I'm always so exhausted. I love it.
Now, I remember telling you that I needed you to help us get work at DISA. Mm-hmm. You barely knew what DISA meant.
I had to look up what DISA was. Yep.
And I sent you off to the big industry day. And I said, wear something nice and smile and ask people about themselves. And you came back getting us on 3 proposal teams.
An idea queue at that.
And in the beginning, you worked 5 hours. Remember, I was hiring for 5 hours a week. Did you ever work 5 hours a week?
I would say, yeah, somewhere between 5 and 10 hours-ish. But I think probably within the first 6 months or so, you had said, like, you know, if you want to work more, if you want to work more, if you want to work more, when can you work full time? And then I think I was around 20-ish hours or under 30. And then that was as long as we could last together and I had to work full time.
Yeah. Why did you want to make the switch to full time?
I don't know if it was wanted or needed. I would say that when I started, I had tasks, right? I had jobs that I needed to complete, but it was a short period of time before I started owning things. So I think it developed into, you're going to lead staffing, you're going to figure out this database and how to do all this stuff. So I felt a sense of ownership over them. I wanted to make sure that they were done well and we had results. And so there just wasn't enough hours anymore.
What has kept you at Nyla versus going off and looking for a different type of job or going back to chemistry?
The work
Do you ask yourself this every day?
No, it just makes sense. I think that I'm in tune with my gut and how I feel. And I think we have a great working relationship. I think you have to have a great working relationship with your boss, but also your team. I love my team. I enjoy making a difference, making things better. There are problems to solve and things to make better every single day. So I couldn't ask for a job that challenges me in all the ways that I need to not get bored.
Now, describe our working relationship for people out there.
We have a great relationship. I think that the best part is we're very honest and real with each other. Sometimes that's a good thing. Sometimes that's a bad thing. But I think we can be honest with each other. We can call each other out for either mistakes or kind of where we need to pick up the slack for each other. And I really enjoy and appreciate the fact that I can give my opinion and it's truly valued.
What would you describe working for me or Nyla is like?
You're surrounded by a bunch of very talented people who bring their very best every day. They get so much done. They have so much energy. And I think it works well with my personality, but also the personality or culture of Nyla. We're definitely all go-getters. We want to do great work. We want to make a difference and have very happy employees that enjoy working for us every day.
Now, before you joined Nyla, did you have a leadership role at the lab?
No. The way that was structured is you started off as an associate scientist and then you moved up to a scientist one, and then you move up to scientist two, three, and four, and then you become a director of a department. So at, I think, the scientist three or four level, you started to get some direct reports. So I had a ways to go.
What was it like to be part of Nyla and to start being a leader, not just a supervisor, but to become a leader?
It was intimidating at first, but the more I think about it, at first I thought, am I prepared for this? Do I have all the tools that I need? But if I actually look back, I've always been a leader. I'm the oldest of all of my siblings. I probably in my first two jobs as well, back when I worked at a chemistry lab and then also this biotech company, the relationship between me and my supervisor was more of, here's a good example. I told him, I think I need a promotion. Like, I think I'm doing a lot of work. And he was like, okay, put this together for me. I'll escalate it up. I just say what I feel. And yeah.
Well, I think what's been interesting is not only have you become a leader, but I was a relatively individual contributor before I started Nyla. So we both have had to learn a lot about leading people. And then we're both running a business with no business background.
Yes.
Which sounds crazy, right? So there we are every day, just essentially figuring it out. What do you think has been the most helpful for you to figure out what to do next?
In a way, right? You have to go with your gut, what feels right. And you have to trust that gut a lot. I feel like in business and in life, there's not always a right answer or a wrong answer. So you have to go with what you think is best and be okay with that. Doing business that way has proven successful for us.
Well, I also think you are a Google master, which I just heard the term is Google University.
it's all out there. I think that's where I earned my shirt. I think you got it for me 2 years ago. And it just says, I don't know, Google it.
It's all out there.
It is.
It's really amazing. I think that's why if we're short with people sometimes, it's because we don't know either. And we've just had to figure it out. Having that strength to believe that you will figure it out and it will be okay is interesting as well. And I feel bad when people are like, well, where's the training? And it's often we're moving or we're so cutting edge that there is no training for what we're doing, or something just changed and there's no like clear path on you do X, Y, and Z.
The people who have been with us for years, they're like that. They take that initiative and they come to us when they've exhausted what they can do and they need a little bit of help. We have a great team because that kind of culture only fits so many.
Definitely everyone's comfortable speaking up.
Yes.
We don't have any, even if people are shy, they are definitely comfortable speaking up in our meetings and telling us that their opinions or where we messed up.
And that's great. I will say to my team all the time, I dropped the ball on this. I made a mistake here because I want them to feel that they can do the same. I don't know if you're having problems with something, especially working in a distributed team, unless you tell me. So it should be both ways, right? We're both humans and we're a team in the end. And so voicing when you need a little bit of help or you don't understand something is so important for success.
Now, you made a change. We've worked in a distributed fashion since we started. Though we weren't too far apart in distance, we were both living in Baltimore City. We didn't see each other that much. So it was like you were like the friend on the other line. I was always calling you from the car.
Yep.
Because I was driving to work and you always picked up. So I appreciate that. That's probably part of the longevity. And the only time I like to talk is when I'm in the car.
Mm-hmm.
So we've always worked in a distributed fashion. We've always been comfortable with a variety of tools to figure things out. But you went to a conference and came back and implemented something. Why don't you tell us about that?
So I went to the Rachel Hollis conference and it was a lot for business owners. And the one thing she shared a lot about communication, and I had this light bulb moment where I realized there's this distributed team and we're using these tools, Slack or email, to share about their jobs, but there's not a clear connection and vision of if I am doing payroll, for instance, how do I make an impact? Like where do I fit in all of this? And so I decided, all right, team, every single Wednesday, we're going to have a big sync. It has to be video. We got to see each other's faces. Come as you are. If you have just crawled out of bed, if you're, you know, wearing a hat, if you have kids attached to you, it doesn't matter. Just come as you are. And let's all discuss, not necessarily as a status meeting for me, for my team to brief me, but for us to brief each other. It gives us an opportunity to be able to ask each other questions and for each department to see how they fit in that big picture and that we couldn't do the work that we do without each individual part.
And this was pre-COVID. So you implemented this about 2 years before COVID, right?
Yeah.
So at the time, it was radical. It was radical to have everyone just like fresh faced because it was Wednesday mornings too, 9 a.m. Wednesday morning.
And that's the beauty of it too. Everybody does feel comfortable how they are. We all see each other without makeup on or, you know, wearing what have you. Or if, you know, our kids are home sick, they're with us, husbands or whoever walking around in the background. And this is our life. And we get to see a little closer into where we're working, what we're doing. It's great.
I think one of the things that you've been good. So when I started working from home, I up and quit on contract one day, kind of cracked. I had taken on too much and up and quit on contract.
I remember that call on the drive home.
You were very upset. And we were surprised that Brian was okay with it. Like Brian knew it was going to happen. And you were more like, what are you doing?
I think to me too. Yeah. And what does this mean?
So then I start working from home and I don't know if I'm antisocial. I think people always think I'm so highly social, but as Amanda learned, I like to just write a lot of things. I like to write directions, assign tasks, and not talk to anybody about it. You insisted that we start syncing because also our connection was getting awkward and fraught as well, where it was kind of cold sometimes, or like it was just like, Amanda, do this via email or Slack message. So now we have bi-weekly syncs, or just once a week if needed, where we run through everything that's going on. And if it's not fully needed an hour, we cut it short. But I think that had been a game changer.
If you don't have that connection with somebody, it just becomes very difficult. I think it all is built on relationships.
And now you, me, and Brian sync twice a week.
And that's great too.
I know. Well, I know you two love it. So it's largely Brian, Shayna, and Amanda. Now, Brian has worked full-time largely on the business or on a specific proposal, while Amanda and I have run strategy and operations, daily operations of the business. So Amanda and I were talking daily about the business and not including Brian, mm-hmm. which hurt his feelings. And I'm highly focused on being efficient. So Amanda and I have no unread emails like anywhere. And no unread text messages, no unread Slack messages. There's nothing we haven't read. And Brian, because he works on contract and or he's more verbal, he's kind of refused to start reading really that much. You know, it's been like an inch forward in our direction. And so I've had to learn to brief him / talk with him.
And I can see the benefit of both. I enjoy talking over the phone. I enjoy the syncs. I think that you can get a lot more accomplished and decided in 30 minutes than you can in 50 emails or all between. So I think there's a happy medium. And I think that I am that between you two.
Well, COVID allowed you to do something pretty drastic in your life.
Yes. So with COVID, it was about a year of both of us working from home every day. And I was like, oh, we're going to make it. We're getting along, not getting divorced. Like this is working right next to each other and being together 24/7. With different things going on in his work, he did put in the request to be 100% remote worker, and it was approved. And really for us, we have some great friends in Maryland, but it was really our jobs and our careers that were keeping us there. When he had the ability to work 100% remote, I had that conversation with you as well. And it's something we've talked about a lot where I feel very fulfilled with work, but I miss home and I miss my family a lot. We had that conversation and you were receptive as well. So we made the big change and we moved from Carroll County, Maryland to Monroe County, or right outside of Rochester, New York.
You were one of the great COVID migrations.
Yes. Yeah. So I had the full experience of the housing market, moving across the states with little kids, and it's great. And we've been here 2 weeks and I've already seen all of my family, my sister who lives in the same town, almost every day.
How many houses did you bid on before you finally got a house?
3 houses, and then we got our 4th. And that's interesting because probably like a lot of people who are in this housing market, by the time we got to our 4th, our real estate agent came through horrible with FaceTime, but you know, here's the kitchen, here's the bathroom, do you like it? And Brian and I were like, okay. You know, he said, you have to put in a bid if you want in the next 12 hours. I think it's going to go. And we're like, okay, let's do it. And if anybody knows us, like we would have researched the street, we would have had somebody do a drive-by, we would have looked up what the—
Yeah, you hadn't even seen the house in person.
But instead we were like, okay. And then back and forth over a few days, we ended up being the winner, got the house, and we were like, oh, shit. and so again, we went through the whole process, but it got to the few days before closing and Brian said, we have to make a trip up there. I just cannot mentally sign this paperwork without seeing this place. So we drove all the way up and saw it. And luckily, it was beautiful. Yeah, it was exactly what we wanted.
How would you describe Nyla's culture to someone? There's what we say, and then there's how would you really describe it, Amanda?
We would certainly hope, as the chief experience officer as well, like what we say and what we put out there is who we are. So I think that we are an aggressive growing company. We have big plans, very ambitious, but at the core, we care about employees first. I hear this from candidates that I chat with, and they'll say, you know, well, what do you measure success with, or what does the company measure success with? And I say, actually, it's not how many proposals we on or how many teams contracts that we have. It is our employee satisfaction and retention rate. And I feel like that speaks volumes. You can see it across the board. You can see it in how our benefits and how we structure those and how we change and improve those every single year. Our plan for supervisors and how we ensure that not only our supervisors and the leadership, but also coworkers are interacting with each other to make sure that everybody feels value and part of a company and has that small business family feel to it. And that's what I think we put out there. So I think we're true to our word.
Now, I created a culture deck that I refused to make pretty for a long time. It was, you know, one word on the side and some bullets on the other side. How true do you think that culture deck that I probably created in 2013, maybe 2014, how reflective of is it? Like, did we have to go back and wildly change it?
No, we definitely improved the graphics and the coloring on it for sure. But I think we've used our culture deck throughout the years as kind of our guiding light. We have our mission and, you know, we care about the mission, the customer, all of that. But as far as when we discuss benefits, where we discuss where we're headed, what we're doing, it always goes back to that culture deck. This is who we are at heart. This is who we want to be. And this is how we want our employees to feel.
What has been some of your favorite moments while working and growing at Nyla?
We just had our 8-year anniversary. And so at that time, I always like, wow, look where we're at right now. And so it always makes me go back to, I remember my first team meeting, which was at Shane and Brian's kitchen table. we ordered takeout and
1125 Hanover Street.
Yep. You know, and strategized and came up with plans, deciding on the first employee picnic, which I love looking back at those pictures. I think that is great. I have pictures where Brian and I attending our first networking session together, you and I submitting our first proposal together.
Oh, yeah.
There's a lot of good ones, but it's just interesting. If you just even take year by year, the change and the growth in us and also in our company, and then to think about wow, what does the next year have in store?
What have been some of the biggest challenges you faced while you're working for Nyla?
I take on too much. I think that I had to realize there's always going to be more work that can be done in a day, and you have to not necessarily prioritize, but you have to be okay with these are the important things that have to get done today. And then the next day, you complete the next thing. It kind of weighed on me at night. I didn't like the mounting to-do list. And I would say to myself, wow, I think I ended the day with more to-dos or more work than I started the day with. And that was just hard to get used to. But over the years, we've gotten a little bit better with that.
Yeah, I always think no one could be bored working for us.
Oh, yeah.
We always have more work. And if there's time, then we'll make up other things. So we have a parking lot of ideas or initiatives that we want to try. And part of it is we have a high degree of experimentation.
I think if you can't experiment and try out new things, you can't grow. We have the things that we want to get accomplished. But I always say too, if we could, we have a moment, let's take a look back and can we do this even better, right? Can we make this more efficient? Can we save some money and put it into this? Some of our tools help achieve that. Some of them kind of turn out to be flops, but you don't know unless you try.
one of your favorite parts about Nyla is working on philanthropy.
It definitely is one of the aspects that brings me the most joy. It's always been a part of something that I've liked to do. I used to work in Frederick. I was in more process development and in scientist there, and I was commuting from Baltimore City. And even then, I was like, oh, these poor puppies need a walk. I'm going to sign up and I'm going to take care of them. I always want to give back in some way. And it's very important for me to show my children as well, giving back, how that feels, the impact, and how important that is. So I've been happy to take over that role and lead it. And we've done everything from Canine for Warriors and that charity chili cook-off. One thing that's really passionate for me is the back-to-school drive for the students of Baltimore City. We are also a part of the Habitat for Humanity. A lot of our engineers really like to build things, which was surprising to me over the years. We've had employees as well. I'm part of this charity, or I live in this area and we see a need and we're like, awesome. You know, more help, more ideas, the better. Because our goal is to have everybody get involved in some way, whether it's a Nyla event and charity or something on their own, and why we offer to pay them 8 hours a year to do so.
And philanthropy has been part of Nyla since the get-go.
Yeah, it's something you started and you felt passionate about, and I certainly was 100% on board. I couldn't agree more.
Last year, your back-to-school drive that you led was really an exceptional turnout. We ended up donating how many laptops?
64 Chromebooks.
And then we paid for the wireless hotspots, too. You found an organization, and then you got another organization to match?
Yes. Yeah, so we have, I think for the fifth or sixth year in a row, we have been donating to Collington Square Elementary Middle School in downtown Baltimore. And a coworker who was helping me lead that really just went through the score ratings of Baltimore City, and it was easy to identify a school that had a big need. I had a conversation with the principal about the ups and downs and some unfortunate things that have happened with their leadership, that they've kind of lost funding in various ways. And so my heart went out to them, and we have been donating every year. With COVID, I knew that Chromebooks were going to be a big need, especially for a school that doesn't have a lot. So we started there. And we had social media kind of reach out, just the regular raising money to support Chromebooks. And then I have an executive coach, Jody Hoom, and she introduced me to Ed Mullen, who leads the Robotic Institute in downtown Baltimore. We had a great conversation. He was all in with donating some money, and then made me an introduction to Gary Bonner of PCs for People. And he was able to donate a bunch of Chromebooks that were refurbished and ready to go. So a bunch of us went over and we had the full collection, and it was just amazing to see. It's the power of networking at its finest. It was amazing.
Yeah, we shook everybody down for lunch money. Because it was during COVID, and normally we're all running around having lunches every day. And so I said, for the cost of a lunch, will you please donate? And we ended up raising how many dollars?
I think it was around $6,000. And I was hoping for $1,000. I mean, I was blown away. So we were able to donate upper 20s Chromebooks, and then PCs for People donated the rest. And of course, that was helped the large donation from Ed Mullen.
I've known you for a while, and I've seen lots of pictures of you, but I don't know that I've ever seen you as happy as the time you shoved pie in my face.
My face. Oh, my gosh. Yes.
We got some good pictures of it, and the sheer joy of shoving pie in my face. It almost was you. It was almost you who got the pie in the face, because someone who doesn't even know you donated $800.
Must know you.
Tell us a little bit about that experience.
So that was the day of our company lunch, and it was down to the wire, I think, even that day. And I remember somebody saying, you know, you're going to put a pie in Shayna's face, like, you're going to be gentle, right? Or you're not going to. And I was like, hell no. I went all in, all yeah. in. It was so fun. So fun. So, so fun.
Now, did it feel awkward to do that?
No, not at all. No. Not at all. I think we should do it every year.
You have been exceptional in finding some programs for us, and one of them is Hire Our Heroes.
So I met Denise Bordeaux, who leads that event, and she also helps transitioning a service member with training. And so I was connected to Hire Our Heroes through different stories of military spouses. You know, they give up a lot to support the service member, child rear, all of that. And then they're kind of left with, what do I do now that I have a little bit of time? And there are some exceptional military spouses that have degrees, PhDs, they have years of experience, but they kind of found a career or a position where they were. And there was a lot of hesitation to go down a path for a career or a job because they didn't know when they were going to leave again, and or they have to step into that full-time parent role, and they're worried about how much they're going to be able to give to the company. I can only imagine how hard that is. So we did hire our hero. She was with us for a little over 3 years. She was going to school to be a nurse, and she helped us out in the staffing department. And she's missed, but it was a great experience, and I'd love to be able to do that again.
Yeah, and our hire not only got her nursing degree, she had 2 children while working for us, and her husband is a full-time Marine at Fort Meade. And then she finally left when she got a full-time nursing position.
And she even resided in a hub zone down in Baltimore City. So she helped us out with different efforts to help in the city as well.
She's wonderful. So Courtney, if you're listening, we miss you. Anytime you want to come back to government contracting, we're here for you. Another amazing program you found was the Apprentice Program from Maryland.
Yes. So I attended it was a one-day State of the Union Governor Hogan held, and one of the talks or the seminars was on their apprenticeship program. And I thought it was cool, the initiative that they have. So there's the monetary part of it where they'll give you tax breaks. They'll also give you a portion rebate on the hourly rate. But the goal is there's a lot of individuals that are out there that either colleges not something that they're aspiring to go and do, but there's also a lot of trades where it's not necessarily needed. That college still for some is a luxury. So to partner together, you can find an apprentice and a program. You structure the program, you know, how you see for the first year or 5 years, what the salary and kind of the growth is. You're paired together and you can help somebody grow and learn their trade. So immediately I thought, there are not enough intel recruiters in this space. And there's a lot of people, whether it's a military spouse or what have you, you know, we have to teach them from square one. They can have years of experience recruiting in other fields, but it's just not the same. So we moved forward with starting that program, getting approved by the board, and having an official State of Maryland apprenticeship program.
Yes, they did not have an apprenticeship program for technical recruiters.
Exactly. Yes.
So you and Raina pushed through State of Maryland.
And we had many calls with our contact over there because he did not understand what's so special about intel recruiting. Why do you need its own apprenticeship program? Why can't you kind of take your program into one of these other already established? And I was like, it is a beast of its own. It needs its own apprenticeship program. Yes.
So about 2 years ago, I pushed you to get a business coach, right? You've been toying with, should you get an MBA? What additional training could you get? And I said, try business coach. And you looked at me like, Well, you look at me sometimes like, you're crazy. Yeah. You're crazy. You don't out and out say no, but you like.
I don't say yes and I just mull it over and thinking, yeah, she's crazy.
Actually, I was recommended my friend Jess Gartner's business coach. And I said, just call this lady and see what you think. And what happened?
So I tried chatting with two different business coaches. I just didn't feel anything. I thought, I don't have anything to talk about, you know, to need. I can figure it out. It's fine. And then I met Jody and we started our sessions. And I was like, wow. No, it really helped my confidence. And it's interesting until you like chat with somebody about your thoughts, the issues that you have, and they just kind of like work themselves out. One of the issues I had to overcome was I felt like for some reason I didn't have the training or the years of experience or the answers that I needed to make the right decision. What I had learned is nobody has those answers, right? There's always a new fire situation that you kind of just have to make decisions with your gut and what you've experienced so far. So she helped me realize that. And another really big thing she helped me realize was she helped with the time management. So I was getting really burnt out and she kind of helped me bucket things, take time in the spaces. She's recommended the walks. And it was something that was very obvious and simple, but during COVID, I was working in my bedroom at a vanity and it bugged me every day. But it wasn't until she was like, you need something, you know, you need light, you need a plant, like something pretty to look at. It bugs you, so change it. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's true. And so I did so, and it makes a world of difference. So I would recommend anybody to, if it's not a business coach, have somebody, a mentor, a coach.
Because your spouse doesn't always want to hear it, right? Like they're helpful, but you can't always go through your problems. And then plus when you have problems with me, you can bring it up sometimes, but it's also good to have a third party. Do you think you have any superpowers, Amanda? You're pretty humble and I know you hate compliments. What would you say your superpower is?
I think that I'm a pretty good problem solver. I think just naturally I can see an issue sometimes even before it is an issue. And
you're like the old lady in the corner. It's coming. Maybe not now.
Looking at it from a few different angles, you know, from the employee's point of view or from, you know, this person or that person's view and solve it comes a little bit more naturally to me than I think some.
You're really good at sussing out the root cause. So we have these pains or we have these Band-Aids. And the minute it repeats like twice, you can see it physically like irritate you. And you dig into why this is happening and what the root cause is. And I'll give two examples. One is staffing at NSA, particularly trying to find full stack software engineers, is very, very difficult.
Right.
And we get better at it each time. But you have been an advocate of exploring elsewhere, always looking elsewhere and expanding our customer mix to be greater. And that proved very useful during COVID when a lot of people didn't want to work at the agency anymore. And we had actually top secret work that people were able to work from home. And then you're actually responsible for us being on our third recruiting tool. I actually had nothing to do with this, but every year, and I think one thing that's challenging in working for the company is it's a constant evaluation of can we improve? And so we decided to use Google's new recruiting tool.
Google Hire, yep.
And it faced some limitations.
A lot of limitations, yeah.
So Amanda took the initiative and found a new tool, Jazz. And then again, last year, I didn't even bring it up to you, but you came and told me that you'd been researching tools because what was one of the things that got us stuck the most and slowed us down the most in recruiting?
First, the reason that I switched to the last tool or the last change was because Jazz had a lot of limitations for reporting. And I think it's so important for our team, especially a team made up of, you know, three or four people, to be able to know different events we do, what is our return on investment, where are our candidates coming from, how long are they in the pipeline. Also for my team, how are they assessing or mapping candidates to open positions, and to make sure that we're doing a good job from the start. So what is that turnaround there?
Yeah, it's a big multi-step process, recruiting. It's amazing when we mapped out our recruiting process, how many steps there are and how many people inject themselves at different steps, because not everyone's good at the entire step. If you make it one big black box, people are weak at certain points, which doesn't mean they can't help. So one of the major slowdowns was also just even the mapping of people to jobs. It was coming in and where should we even interview this person? Do we have an opening for them? What are the potential openings? Was something that was pretty challenging. Is there anything that you wish you did differently, looking back on this journey so far?
When I went to college, my undergrad, I decided to commute and I decided to work through college. I was going to pay off my college tuition as I went. And I feel now, as I'm much older and had a lot of adulting, I wish I would have dormed and maybe enjoyed being a young, carefree kid a little bit more.
How have you been growing your professional network?
My professional network has grown over the years as my impact within NYLA. So, for a while I was working within staffing, and my network grew a lot with engineers in the space. And then I moved into more of a BD role leading within the DoD, and it's definitely grown a lot there. But I would say, you know, the split, I probably am and always have been more 60% work from home, the operations behind the scenes, and more or less in person. So I would say it's a lot more through LinkedIn and those connections than it is in person or regular meetings.
Now, for those who don't know Amanda and I that well, Amanda is more fiscally conservative than I am, but probably most people are more fiscally conservative than I am. So we are a good yin and yang. How has that been for you while working at NYLA? Has it been like, for a while, I said yes to everything, right? I was like, here are the coffers. Spend them as you see fit. And you were like, what is that? That's crazy.
It has definitely been stressful, I would say. I probably would be a little bit more conservative with money and growth plans and stuff like that. But I think that that's what makes it a good partnership, right? I'm probably a little bit too conservative. And you, yes, definitely say yes or why not a little bit more than I would. So we definitely balance each other out.
I'm not sure if there's anything else where we come at things so differently.
I've always been that way, being very conservative. It's funny. I remember my first semester of college, I took some calculus class, and he started off the class by saying, I gave my children $1 million. And I was like, what is he talking about? And so he goes into it of, he actually gave or invested $200 a month when his kids turned 20. And so in the end, right, he has given him $1 million. And so shortly after that class or after that semester, I remember I had my grandparents take me to their financial advisor, and you better believe I opened up a mutual fund. I could only afford $100 at the time, but I opened up $100 and I was like, I'm going to start saving.
That's awesome. So it was all spurred by that calculus class?
I guess because it opened my eyes of it just like starts small. I don't think I ever looked at it that way before. I thought maybe, you know, to invest something, you needed more money. But when he was like, it was, you know, I can't remember, $100 or $200, and you just invest, right? And you don't miss that money.
Now, I'm a big reader, so please tell me about your favorite book. What book has had a big impact on you?
So related to business, I would say it's definitely the 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership. And I actually, from that, started following John Maxwell.
I listen to his podcasts and subscribe to him on Instagram. I think it's good for building teams. I just think he has a lot of very useful nuggets in that book. I probably would read it two or three more times. I think there's something to validating that you following your gut is working. You're making good decisions. I think that's the biggest thing, is it's given me a lot more confidence.
What advice do you have for young people? So if someone looks at you and says, wow, Amanda, sounds like you have the bomb job.com. What advice do you have for people to get professional success?
Don't be afraid to try new things. Life isn't always a smooth, straight path. Sometimes it has curves and bumps and roadblocks, but in those roadblocks, you find out really who you are and what you're good at. Would I be where I am right now if I followed a certain path, right? Well, this is what I went to college for, okay? And this is where I grew up, or this is the town I lived in. And so I got to do this next thing. I've deviated all over the place. And I think each thing has opened my eyes and helped me realize who I am, what really interests me, what keeps me excited, what makes me happy.
What's it like to work with a husband and wife team? So you're kind of the third pillar, that you're not the, we do have four people that make up the executive team right now. You are one of the owners of Nyla. So you're definitely in the partner. And what's it like to work with a husband and wife? Do you even think that we're a husband and wife?
100%. 100%. Yes. The one thing I would say, and I don't know if it's due to our almost 6 years of a working relationship, is I get to see the real you, both of you, right? I get to see the highs, the lows, the arguments, all of that together. But in that, and like in that messy part, and like all of that, is why we have such a good relationship. We're just open and honest, and we say how we feel, and that's how we've got to know each other so well. And on the flip side, though, I would say you know me so well that you've also pushed me a lot, and I feel that I've grown so much over the past 6 years because I'm continually being pushed out of my comfort zone, like doing a podcast.
I know. Tell us something about yourself that might surprise others.
I mean, I don't know about surprise, but I would say I freaking love being a mom so much. Like, I love the homemade cakes. I love the Pinterest crafts. I love the April Fools and Color Blue Day. And I just love all that stuff so much. And I feel maybe a little part of that work-life integration is I feel I work hard and I work a lot, but I also take those moments for my family, like while my kids are young. And so I feel very satisfied because being a good and present mom is so very important to me.
Do you feel any mom guilt about working?
Of course. I don't know any mom who doesn't have guilt about something. I always could be doing more.
Oh my God, you'd say that about every single element of your life. You'd say that about finance, about working out. You'd say that about everything. You could always do more.
I always try to remind myself I am giving my girls a good example, a good role model, that I'm showing the balance, but I'm working hard. I'm dedicated.
Not only are you incredibly good at your job, and it's been a pleasure to see you grow. And I feel like this last year and now into even this year, you're really blossoming, right? I've seen some years we had it a little more challenging, but here I feel like you've really kind of come into your own and owned your power and your strength and where you're good and solidified kind of our relationship. But I think for me, in a selfish way, you working in the business has always made the business way more fun for me. In the beginning, before you came along, the business was very, very hard and lonely. I was out there selling this vision and this dream. And I think you believed in that vision. I am able to talk to you in a very natural, well, I am myself with you. I think I always have been. And it's easy between us, and it's pretty much always been easy. And so I think it has made this journey that much more fun. That's the part that I enjoy. And I think that I also love that you make sure that we are bringing joy to people as well, which has always been a focus of mine. But when I drop that ball, you pick it up and pass it back and say, like, keep focused. This is the goal. So I thank you so much. I thank her privately. And now I'm thanking her publicly for being part of this crazy ride. And someday they're going to write books on this, Amanda. Yeah. You better keep your receipts. Thanks so much for listening to today's podcast. Please be sure to share it with friends and family. If you'd like to follow us on social media, you can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn under the Outspoken Podcast. Thanks again, and chin up, heads up, eyes forward.